Watching Out, Fran Varady, Book 5. Written by Anne Granger and read by Kim Hicks.
Chapter 1. Six of us huddled together for warmth upstairs in the Rose pub. None of us said a word. Our attention was fixed on a large, dusty wicker laundry basket. It had a faded label on one side reading, "Return to the Hotel Royal Yarmouth," and on the opposite side, another label reading, "Props, do not remove." "Right," said Marty at last, with forced heartiness. "Let's see what's inside." The Rose was an old-style London tavern. It had brown, glazed tiles on the outside walls and smoke-stained anaglypta on the internal ones. The original saloon and public bars had long since been knocked together, making one big room, at the far end of which was a small dais. On this, Freddy, the landlord, invited singers and comics to entertain his customers. Those desperate enough to break into show business accepted his offer and stood up there as vulnerable as the coconuts at a fairground shy, while the customers whistled and shouted rude remarks. Upstairs, where we found ourselves in suspicious contemplation of the laundry basket, there was a proper, if small, stage with curtains. This, besides being what Freddy called the functions room, was also his private theatre, where he put on bigger shows. Freddy was inordinately proud of his record as a theatrical entrepreneur. The shows didn't take place often, but when they did, they were acknowledged locally as being unmissable and the seating a sellout. Not a man to throw money around, he put a modest amount into the production of the shows and always got it back at the door. He knew how to sweat the maximum effort out of a production whilst getting someone else to do all the work putting the show together. As an organiser, Freddy was unrivalled, but his natural stinginess showed in our surroundings. The functions room hadn't been redecorated in years, and the faded velvet curtains on the stage looked about to collapse under the weight of their years and accumulated grime. There was a lingering background smell to the place, to which every bit of the pub's 120-year history had contributed. The reason for our presence there was that on this upstairs stage, at Freddy's invitation, we were to perform a dramatic adaptation of Conan Doyle's novel The Hound of the Baskervilles. It was Freddy's latest shrewd idea for entertaining the masses and making a few quid at the same time. It had been adapted by our director, Marty. He was a playwright himself and would dearly have loved to be putting on one of his own plays. But Freddy wanted traditional entertainment, and what Freddy wanted, Freddy got. "Perhaps," Marty had said optimistically, "if we do this really well, he'll let me put on one of my own plays next time." This was extremely unlikely, but creative artists and writers are fragile souls, and Marty needed all the encouragement he could get. For those of you who don't know the plot of Conan Doyle's yarn, the Baskerville family is threatened by a supernatural hound because of some ancestor's crime. Sir Charles Baskerville has been found dead, and near his body is the imprint of a hound's paw. His heir, Sir Henry, has just arrived in England from Canada to take up his inheritance. The family doctor goes to Holmes because he's afraid the hound will get Henry too. So Holmes sends Watson off to Devon to guard Sir Henry, and himself hides out on the moor. Then there's a butterfly hunter called Stapleton and his sister, who's really his wife, and an escaped convict related to Sir Henry's housekeeper, and it all gets a bit complicated. The climax, of course, is the appearance of the ghastly hound in pursuit of poor old Sir Henry, who is rescued by Holmes and Watson and the mystery revealed. There are a few other characters in the original story, but Marty had cut them out. You'll understand why. I was cast in the female lead, Miss Stapleton, the woman Sir Henry Baskerville falls for. Marty himself was playing Sir Henry. He couldn't play Holmes because he wasn't the right shape. Everyone who thinks Holmes thinks along the lines of Basil Rathbone in those wonderful black and white movies, or Jeremy Brett in the old television series. Marty was short and dumpy, with a plump face, receding fair curly hair and spectacles. He bore a strong resemblance to a teddy bear,